It is very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you for the next couple of hours now, just to interrupt the show briefly before we start. If you have just joined us, it is 12 o'clock, and according to what we're hearing, there is going to be a major announcement from government. But most people seem to know what the major announcement is already. They said it was going to be earth-shattering news or earthquake news. Well, it does seem that the news is, well, we were predicting initially a general election, then Roderick O'Gorman was going to resign, but it does seem the news is that Leo Varadkar's resigning. He's stepping down as the leader of the Fine Gael party. According to the news just out now, Leo Varadkar is set to step down as Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader. The cabinet has been meeting in government buildings all morning in advance of the announcement. And they said this morning there had been intense speculation about the Taoiseach's future. And government parties say that they don't expect today's announcement to trigger a general election because that would be chaos. If there was a general election, of course, with June elections, of local elections, MEP elections in June as well, a general election would cause absolute and utter chaos this time. And it wouldn't be a good thing for government because, of course, there isn't a good sense in the air at the moment that anybody wants any political party. And that includes the oppositions, by the way. Nobody wants them in either. So this is a really bad time for a general election. The government would hope that a general election would be pushed out until after the budget, probably winter time in November or December. At the latest, it has to be next March. But with Leo Varadkar stepping down, one wonders now, who's going to step in? Will it be Helen McEntee? I predicted this last year. I said last year that Leo Varadkar will step down before a general election. And I said this would be strategic. I don't think Leo Varadkar is stepping down because people have no confidence in him. I think people have no confidence in him anyway. But I think it's strategic. General election before the end of the year. They can't just put somebody else as leader of Fine Gael just before the general election, because that's not going to build confidence in anybody. So who will they put in? I already said it. Helen McEntee. Neil Richmond, maybe. Helen McEntee, absolutely. Can you imagine Helen McEntee as the Taoiseach of Ireland? And this is not sexist. I don't care if it's a woman or a man who's the Taoiseach. It's irrelevant. But I do care if it's Helen McEntee. Because Helen McEntee doesn't listen to the people. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe any of them are listening to the people at the moment. But we will get some observations from what is being said at 12 o'clock. It is live on RTE at the moment. And we will get some observations and we'll give you some updates on the news and that as well. And we'll be talking to John McGurk a little bit later on from Grip Media. And also, we'll be speaking as well to Pádraig Tobin from Aintu. And getting some reaction from him in relation to what happened. Because Pádraig, as you know, has been calling for the resignation of Roderick O'Gorman over the referendum last week. The government took a good kick in the teeth last week because of the referendum. Remember, of course, the government were pushing a yes vote. Didn't even have a debate about it in November. They were the ones who chose the wording. And a record number of people said no in an Irish referendum for the first time. It's not unusual, by the way, for a government to lose a referendum. It's happened 13 times in the past. Well, mind you, that is quite limited considering we've had over 40 referendums. But this is a record defeat. Over 73% on one occasion and 69% on the other. So realistically, the government are in serious trouble. And not only are the government in trouble, but the opposition parties are equally in trouble as well. Because, of course, when you look at the opposition parties, they're all singing from the same hymn sheet as the government. So we want to know what you think of that, by the way. And that announcement, and you can text or WhatsApp us on 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Now, we had started to talk, or we had planned to talk today, about hate speech laws, which coincidentally brings Helen McEntee into the story, really, doesn't it? And although Elon Musk defends the Irish people and free speech and said, you know, he's against the Irish hate speech laws, a Private Oireachtas hearing last Wednesday said staff are understood to have committed, or should I say not last Wednesday, last month, staff at Twitter have committed to abiding by the Irish hate speech laws. The incitement to violence or hatred and hate offences bill 2022 is currently stalled in the Shannon, having passed in the Dáil early last year. If made into law, of course, it will introduce aggravated versions of crimes in cases where offences are motivated by hatred against a person's protected characteristics. The danger is, of course, we haven't defined hate. And those characteristics really include everybody. Race, colour, nationality, religion, national ethnic origin, descent, and the interesting one is gender, also entailing gender identity. And this is where this law comes from and originates. Because if we remember, of course, the hate speech law was brought in because of misgendering. Well, that was certainly one of the reasons that triggered the hate speech laws. It also can, by the way, the other characteristics are sex characteristics, sexual orientation, disability. So it really is, everybody is covered. In other words, you can't offend anybody. Now, the minister was quite clear that the likes of, say, J.K. Rowling, who misgendered somebody, and I'm going to come back to that in a second, won't be categorised under this law or charged under this law for misgendering somebody. In other words, for calling a transgender woman a man because they were born a biological man. But then again, she already has said the Attorney General won't allow her to define the word hate, and that's up to the courts to decide. So she can't guarantee that if you misgender somebody or won't use the pronoun that they desire you to use and play their game, well, then you can end up in court and be charged. She can't guarantee that because she said by her own admission, it's up to the courts to define it. And not only that, our hate speech laws go a step further. Not only if you publish something, but if you even think about publishing it and have it on your phone and somebody suspects that, the Garda Síochána can raid your home, take your phones and your phones of your family and your friends, and if they find something on it that they believe could be triggering or could be offensive or could be incitement, you can also be charged. But we don't know what incitement means. Now, Limerick Fianna Fáil TD Willie O'Dea has broken ranks with Fianna Fáil. And Fianna Fáil are also in trouble, by the way. That's another announcement that's on the way. Over his, well, he doesn't support the proposed hate speech legislation. He describes it as woke, and he's calling for it to be abandoned. The former Minister for Defence also described the Green Party and the non-governmental organisations, the NGOs, as out of touch with the public. Fianna Fáil, he said, needs to get back to basics and abandon the hate speech bill. Now, we're not the only ones battling with these laws. Currently, at the moment, of course, we're battling with them across Europe with the digital treaty. And we need somebody in Europe who's not woke. The European MEPs that we currently have in this country are a bunch of assholes. And there's no doubt about that. And we need to do something about that. And we need to do something serious about it. We need somebody in Europe who's going to stand up against these stupid laws. In Scotland, from the 1st of April, of course, the new law, which the Scottish government says modernises and extends the hate crime law, is pretty much the same as what we're bringing in. It covers basic characteristics, including race, religion, sexual orientation, transgender identity. But not only that, they've gone as far as to say that you will have no exceptions for plays, comedy or stage performances under the guise of art. In other words, even comedians won't escape this new law. It'll be also illegal under Scottish law from the 1st of April to misgender a person. Now that puts J.K. Rowling in an awkward situation because she's already misgendered India Willoughby, who is a news broadcaster on the BBC on ITV, and said she's a man, which he was born a man. It's scientifically correct. So realistically, J.K. Rowling could be charged, the first person to be charged in Scotland, unless she removes the tweets that she's put up over the last few weeks. She's been asked to remove them and delete them, and she's refused to do so. And she said she won't be doing it. It'll be interesting to see one of the richest people in the world, one of the most famous authors in the world, brought to court for calling a person a man. Which, India Willoughby, is a man. Was born a man, but now identifies as a woman. In Ireland, the minister has said she can't guarantee, or she can't define the word hate, and the courts will have to invariably decide what hate actually means. So, the question really that I'm asking today is free speech, is it an absolute? Let us know what you think. The number is 085-122-55. Morris and Jackie, I'll be with you in momentarily. But first of all, I just want to go to ANC leader Padder Tobin. Padder, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you?
And Padder, by the way, before I haven't got to speak to you all week, congratulations, by the way, on the No campaign. You worked tirelessly over the month, and congratulations, and you were rewarded well. One of the only Irish parties, yourself and Independent Ireland, who actually asked people to vote No. So well done to you, and congratulations.
We're delighted with it. It's good news. And to be honest, and it just shows you one of the themes of the debates that we've been having for many years is that there's a political bubble in this country who, you know, between the NGOs, some elements of the media, and politicians who are not listening to the people on the ground. And I got that message loud and clear last week. So it was great news. Delighted.
Okay. Well, I suppose the other news today is we were all anticipating over the last hour. Many of my friends were journalists. Now, I haven't been on the air since 12, so I haven't heard Leo Varadkar yet. But in saying that, we all know now, of course, Leo Varadkar has to step down as Taoiseach of Fine Gael. And leader of Fine Gael, should I say, according to the cabinet, they had a meeting in government buildings in advance of the announcement. Your reaction to that, first of all, did you? Well, people were expecting it to be Roderick O'Gorman because, of course, you yourself and Aintu have been calling for the resignation of Roderick O'Gorman. So he's Leo's not the only one that should be going. But why Leo Varadkar? Why do you think he stepped down?
Yeah, well, I think that Leo Varadkar has proven to be a very, very poor leader since his time as Taoiseach. I think, if you look in electoral terms, he has lost pretty much every election and every campaign that he was involved in. And, you know, I would imagine that people are starting to get very nervous within Fine Gael. You can see that 10 of their TDs have stated that they're not going to stand. That's nearly a third of their parliamentary team. So, you know, that underlines that there's a lack of confidence there in his leadership and in Fine Gael in the future. And also, just in terms of his delivery for the country, his time as Taoiseach has been exceptionally poor. We've had the continued, you know, crisis in housing, in healthcare, in education, in transport, in this country, and I think that we've seen that kind of that gulf between, you know, the citizens and the political class widen significantly in his time as Taoiseach. So I think that he knew that his number was up, and I don't think that Fine Gael wanted to go into government or go into an election cycle with him in leadership. Now, what I would say is that the position of Taoiseach is not a position that should be handed around like snuff at a wake. Normally, a person is elected Taoiseach as a result of a general election. We've already had the position of Taoiseach swapped from Micheál to Leo, and I don't think it should be let swap again in the next period of time.
But if that's the case, then we could be in for a general election because, well, they're hoping, I imagine they're hoping it'll be just swapped to Micheál. Or there was a suggestion, by the way, going back a while ago, that Eamon Ryan be given the position. Now, that could be disastrous for the country.
Well, that would be disastrous from the country because if there's any party that is not representative of the vast majority of Irish people at the moment, and that's the Green Party, the most out-of-touch political party in the country currently.
And they technically have a year to do a lot of damage.
They would. So, you know, they're talking about whether or not Helen McEntee or Simon Harris or could be made the leader of Fine Gael.
I made this prediction last year, Pater, and I said that Leo Varadkar would step down and Helen McEntee would step in. And I predicted the timing of it as well because I said they won't do it too close to a general election because it won't give people time to get to know her, so to speak. And I believe that he would step down. I said it last year. He would step down before the summer and move her into the position for people to get to know her before a general election. But I don't believe the people of Ireland, and I'm going to be talking about hate speech legislation in a few minutes, I don't think the people of Ireland like Helen McEntee.
No, I think like Helen McEntee has been a very, very poor Minister for Justice. You know, we've been raising this very solidly over the last 2 years. You know, we have a doubling in the level of rape that's happening in the country, a doubling in the level of sexual assault, a doubling in the level of serious violent crime. And at the same time, the Garda force has fallen in numbers every year since she has been Minister for Justice. Gardaí are resigning and retiring now in larger numbers than ever. Every day, Gardaí are being attacked. And, you know, at the same time, Helen McEntee has been distracted by the culture wars and the hate speech bill. So, you know, again, I think she is really emblematic of the real problem that's in Fine Gael at the moment and in much of the government parties, of a political class that is completely distracted by, you know, the concerns of the NGO political bubble and, you know, only interested in those issues, but not paying any attention to the bread and butter stuff that people want them to focus on. You know, people want Helen McEntee to focus on making their communities safer. And that's not what she's done.
No.
She's done the opposite over the last 4 years of being a minister.
So your predictions now are that it would be either Helen McEntee or Simon Harris. Simon Harris, do you think he'd be a safe pair of hands? He seems to be a likeable kind of guy, but is he fit for the job?
I think Fine Gael are going to be in trouble because while Simon Harris is an articulate individual and he's able to communicate very well, I think that he and Helen McEntee don't represent there's two wings to Fine Gael, at least traditionally there's been two wings to Fine Gael. There has been the kind of urban liberal elite But there's also been a wing to Fine Gael which has been, let's say, more rural and more conservative in their political instincts. And that wing of Fine Gael hasn't had any real representation in Fine Gael for a long time, which I suppose Simon Coveney especially reducing in the stature that he had within the party. But I think that if the leadership goes to either Helen or Simon Harris, you'll find a lot of those individuals who used to make up, you know, many of the TDs and many of the support base of Fine Gael throughout the country will no longer stick with them. Already there are many counties now in Fine Gael that don't have a Fine Gael TD. And, you know, increasingly Fine Gael is becoming a South Dublin political party. That's where its centre of gravity is located now. It's not located in the rural and regional constituencies throughout the country, and that's a big problem for Fine Gael. If they continue down this route, they won't be able to claim to be a national party representative of all elements of Ireland in the future as such.
Okay, and just finally, your prediction. Do you believe this will turn into chaos during the week, political chaos? I think there's already political chaos since the referendum, to be honest with you. They just abandoned the country and didn't know very much about it. But do you believe that this will turn into political chaos and we'll be forced into a general election?
I think it would be absolutely chaotic for this government to think that they can just hand on the baton of the role of Taoiseach to another elected representative, the third Taoiseach in the one government, the third Taoiseach in the one democratic mandate. And the idea that they can do that, I think, gives the two fingers to the people. And I think that given the absolute mauling the political establishment got in the referendum, and I've been talking to people, you know, in the days since, there is a palpable anger currently throughout the country at the political establishment in this country. People are fed up to their back teeth of a government ignoring the bread and butter issues and being completely distracted by the culture wars. And I think if the government were to literally ignore the people again in the passing on of the Taoiseach's baton, they'll definitely reap a very, very negative reward come the next election. Aintu is on the record in calling for the general election to be held on the same day as the local and Europeans. Anything else would be a travesty democratically.
Would that not just dilute the whole problem? I mean, if we have a general election on the same day, essentially, as the local and European elections, is that not going to dilute the information that we're getting, i.e., you know, you're going to have European MEP candidates, you're going to have local candidates, and you're going to have party candidates all looking for a bit of airtime, all looking for news grabs and sound bites. So is it not going to dilute the whole thing? And people, I mean, I don't think it's going to be fair in the general public to do that. Well, and on top of that, there's a referendum on the same day as well.
I think there would be a complexity to it. There's no doubt about that. But I do think that, you know, I have significant confidence in the ability of the Irish people to grapple with these issues. And I think the idea of this government lasting another year would be far worse than holding a third election on that date. And also the idea of choosing another date and spending maybe 25 million euros for a separate date for an election would also be bad news too. I think most people would be able to separate in their minds the three elections and the fact that there are three locations and that individuals are standing in those areas. And I think people will vote along kind of party lines more so in an effort to make sure that they get it right in those terms. But in relation to...
He just said, by the way, I'm just hearing my ear, he just said that he said in his own statement he feels he's not good enough for the job anymore.
Wow. Well, in fairness,
I don't think he was ever good enough for the job. In fairness,
this is one of the few moments and times where I have to agree with him. I don't think he. Unfortunately for Leo, and this is nothing personal against him, I think that Leo, even when he was a minister, was all style and no substance. He had the ability from the early days as a minister to communicate with the media, but there wasn't the
backup of achievement
in terms of.
In 2015, and I'm sorry to go on, and I won't keep it, you know, it's sure. A very busy day for you, but in 2015, Leo Varadkar changed. When, of course, we had the marriage equality referendum, he came out during that, as you know, as a gay man. And sure. I'm not suggesting that's anything to do with his change, by the way. But I believe that he went from being reasonably conservative and appealing to a market and a certain number of people who had voted for Fine Gael, maybe on that for that reason. He went to being from being conservative to quite liberal. And I think he has progressed down that road over the last 4 or 5 years to being extremely progressive and liberal, which doesn't maybe suit everybody.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt that, you know, Fine Gael put their finger in the air to find out which way the wind was blowing halfway through the last decade. But, you know, I think that's one of the big problems with Irish politics is that, you know, it's the old statement of, like, show me which direction the people are going in because I want to get in front of them to lead them. You know what I mean? That's not what politics should be about. Politics should be about, you know, people who have a conviction about what the right thing to do is, and that should be based on evidence and on a moral compass. And, you know, they should very clearly communicate what their vision of Ireland is and then hope, you know, that they can gain the imagination and the vision of people and then, you know, be able to build governments. But what's been happening over the last 15 years is that most of the big political parties don't have a moral compass, don't have a backbone, don't have an objective. They just see themselves as career politicians, mm-hmm. you know, literally functionaries of what way they think that politics is going in at a certain time. The problem is they haven't been really listening to the people. They've been listening to the people through the lenses of the likes of the NGOs, focus groups, opinion polls, etc. And that's why we in AIM2, as a party that's building, really focus on building grassroots organizations throughout the country with members on the ground, commons, who then feed up that information and keep us straight in terms of the direction that needs to go in.
I mean, AIM2 have been quite complimentary about AIM2 over the last few weeks, Patter, but I have to be honest, there is one question that people keep asking about AIM2, and that's your position on immigration, because that is one of the number one things that people are concerned about at the moment. They feel voiceless.
Oh, it is. And to be honest, like, and this is really important to say, AIM2 is by far the strongest political party in Leinster House on the issue of migration, by far. So in other words, when all the other political parties in Leinster House were calling anybody who asked questions of the system names and pigeonholing them as far right or extremists, etc., we had the backbone to stand up to the government at that stage. Most of the information that's in common knowledge now about the issues of migration have actually come from AIM2 research and AIM2 parliamentary questions. So we were the people who put in the questions to find out that 85% of people who have received, you know, deportation orders have never had those deportations orders exercised or actioned. We were the people that found out that 5,000 people came through Dublin Airport last year without proper travel documents and passports. We were the people who found out that 75% of the people of migrants are now registering within the IPO office, and that the government is not even asking them how they came into the country. You know, we were the people who were finding out that it was taking 6, 7, and 10 years for applications to be even processed. And so, you know, we've been very, very strong on the issue. We have said that if a person is fleeing war or violence, that we should do their best within sustainability reasons to help them. But we've also been very clear that we need an effective mechanism to differentiate between those who need help and those who don't. And those should be not allowed to stay within the country.
And obviously abandon the reckless policy that we seem to have at the moment as well. Thank you very much indeed, Patter Tobin. I appreciate you coming on to talk to us today. It's been a very interesting day. Thank you, Patter.
Thank you, Niall. Appreciate it.
There you go, Patter Tobin. And can I also say, by the way, Patter has always come on the air. He's always accepted our invitation to come on the air. We have had many other politicians over the last few years, both on my radio show and here, who regularly decline us and will not come on the air to talk to us. And I'm sorry to keep Morris and Jackie waiting so long, but this is obviously breaking news at the moment. Morris, just very quickly, if you want to just give us your reaction first to that, because I do want to go to John McGurk from Grip Media in a second. Morris.
Yeah, how you doing, Niall? I gave up the drink for Lent and I can't even have a drink to celebrate. I'm delighted he's gone. The writing was on the wall a long time ago. To think that we have illegal people in this city of ours, their capital city, marching to government buildings, demanding a house. What are they running here? It's a circus. Illegal people with no identification, banding together with NGOs, marching on the free streets of Dublin, Ireland, demanding housing. And we have 3,000 Irish-born children living in emergency accommodation along with 11,000 adults. Disgraceful. Anybody that's a part of all this wrongdoing in this country, they shouldn't even get a pension.
But Leo Varadkar's only the tip of the iceberg. I mean, Leo Varadkar, obviously, he's the captain of the ship. But I mean, AIM2 have been calling for the resignation of Rodrigo Gorman for the last week and a half, and there hasn't been a word out of him. I mean, and he's responsible. Now, I know Leo is the delegator, but ultimately, when it comes to immigration, Rodrigo Gorman is the man responsible. When it comes to crime on the streets, Helen McEntee is the one responsible. And by the way, the prediction is possibly that she could be the Taoiseach.
And none of these people were voted in by the people. These were all voted in by their party. Do you see what I mean, the way they're taking the power away from us? If you want a new leader of a party, the people should pick the person or vote for
them. So do you want a general election?
100%. We don't need another Taoiseach in this country, a Tory Taoiseach. Eamon Ryan, forget about it. But that was also suggested
as well before Christmas, that Eamon Ryan would be given a shot at the title, so to speak. But that would give Eamon Ryan roughly 9 months if we were to go by the general election, because we predicted it'll probably be November, December or January. That'll give Eamon Ryan 9 months to destroy the country.
And the only thing he'll get over the 9 months is a bigger pension because he was Taoiseach. But I'll tell you one thing, Niall. I think that he's not the only minister that should fall on their sword. If there's anybody out there that has a bit of backbone like him, what did he say in one of his statements? I don't think I'm up to the job anymore.
That's what he said.
The people on the street knew that. There was no need for him to go to America and make a show of this country. He really did. He made a show of the country. So, Niall, good riddance to him. You tried. You gave it your best shot. You failed. Back off. And I wanted this government to listen to the people of Ireland. I'm just one of them. I'm an ex-army man, and I didn't feel safe in my own city with my daughter, with my son and my wife, right? Any ex-politician that gets out of politics should have no financial gain on the country or the people's pockets 3 years after they leave government. It should be brought into power.
Okay, listen, thank you for that, Morris. Jackie, I'll be with you in a second. I just want to go to John McGurk, editor of Grip Media. John, how are you doing? Interesting day today.
Busy day, Niall. How are you?
Yeah, well, look.
I wasn't
expecting that. I was expecting either an announcement of a general election or Roderick O'Gorman to be resigning. I wasn't expecting Leo Varadkar, although many people, I predicted it last year. I said he would resign, and I said Halle McEntee will take over, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, I wrote a piece at the beginning of the year, which was sort of 10 predictions for the year, and one of them, I'm pleased to say, was that one of either Leo or Micheál Martin would not survive the year as leader. I mean, I think if you look at, you stand back and step away from the sort of the shocking imminence of the announcement, and you look at the bigger picture, I think this something like this was kind of inevitable. Leo Varadkar, people forget, his first election was the local elections of 2004. And he was an electoral superstar. He got elected with something like 4,500 votes in a local election. And Fine Gael eyes lit up. And they said, this guy wins votes like no one we've ever seen. Then he got elected in Dublin West. I think he topped the poll in his first election. And so his big selling point to Fine Gaelers from day one was, this is a guy who can win us votes and win us seats and deliver elections.
Yeah, he was young and was charismatic. Yeah. And he was a doctor.
And if you judge him on that metric, we can talk about policy in a minute, but if you just judge him, if you're a Fine Gael backbencher and you're looking at this guy, he's been Taoiseach for 7 years. Fine Gael has gotten smaller by the year. They've lost seat after seat. They've lost election after election. He lost 5 by-elections. He's just led the party and the government through literally the most humiliating referendum defeat in its history. And they're facing into local and European elections in 10 weeks' time and a general election within a year. And I was listening to his statement, and in fairness to the man, that did seem to be out of his mind. He said, look, I've got party colleagues who are seeking re-election here, and I don't think I'm the best man to save their seats. And I really think that's why this was inevitable to begin with. Mm-hmm. But if you take the sort of electoral analysis away, and you just look at Leo Varadkar's career, I mean, I'm just left with this feeling of utter sort of disillusionment, because he is somebody who, when he was 18 or 19 years of age, he was writing letters to the Irish Times saying, you know, the government should do this, the government should do that. He'd been active in politics since he was old enough to vote. And he was given an opportunity that tens of thousands of people in this country would kill for. In his middle 30s, in the prime of his life, he was put in charge of our country. He said, here you are now, Leo. You're in charge.
You
take the tiller, steer the ship in whatever direction you want to steer it, and leave us a better country. And I'm just left with a feeling of what a waste of a career. That's what I look at Leo Varadkar. That's what I think. What an absolute
But I mentioned a pat or toe being there a few minutes ago. If you go back, 10 years ago, Leo Varadkar was a very different person than he is now. His views on life were very different. And I don't want to talk about the fact just because he's a gay man and he came out in 2015 or 2017 for the marriage equality referendum. No, 2015, sorry, for the marriage equality referendum. But his tune did change and he became progressive, much more liberal, and seemed to lose touch with the electorate.
Yeah, and I think that's something that really defines his term in office. By the end of when he got elected the first time, it's not, I don't want to exaggerate, but he kind of was presenting himself as a champion for the voters against the system. if you know what I mean. I'm going to shake things up. He had this famous campaign around 2011 of he was going to crack down on welfare fraud and
stand
up for the ordinary, honest, hardworking person who was being shafted by a sort of lazy, flabby system. And by the end of his time in office, he completely flipped. He was then sort of an advocate for the system against the public. Like his job, and so many Irish ministers go through this transformation. They go in saying they'll fight for the public against the system, and by the end of their time in office, they're basically saying, I am a representative of the permanent government and the civil service, and you don't know enough. You don't know what you're talking about. We are here to defend the system against criticism from the public. And so he started echoing all these concerns. The people who were protesting various issues were far right. They were something wrong with them, rather than there being something wrong with the system that those people were protesting. And you know, it just, as I say, my overriding thought when I look at Leo Varadkar, who's somebody I knew a little bit years ago when he was a lot younger, is just overwhelming disappointment for what could have been as opposed to what turned out. They say all careers end in failure, all political careers end in failure. This one certainly has not.
Do you think he'll step out of politics altogether?
I do, actually. I mean, listening to some of my colleagues in the media a little while ago saying, oh, he might be off to Brussels, he might be off here. I don't think so. I don't think anyone in Brussels would particularly want him.
But he just announced he has no current plans. Now, we do know that he's been cozying up to Ursula von der Leyen and everybody else in Europe. So we do know he's probably looking for the European job. But the other thing as well is, I predicted in New Year's, and I think a few people laughed at me, that Leo Varadkar would step down before the end of the year and that Helen McEntee would take over his Taoiseach. Do you think I'm right?
Well, just on the European thing, first of all, I just say I do talk to a lot of European embassies as part of the work that I do. And Leo Varadkar is not as popular in Europe as the Irish Times would have you think he is. In fact, he's deeply unpopular of late. His comments in particular around Israel and Gaza might be very popular here in Ireland, but they're not popular in a lot of European capitals. I think it's important to bear that in mind. In relation to who the next leader would be, I'm not sold on this Helen McEntee become leader idea. I think a lot of Fine Gael backbenchers look at her march.
It's either her or Simon Harris, isn't it?
I think there's a dark horse you're not thinking of. Initial soundings, I think there's a centrist bank in the Fine Gael party who think that what they need right now is a steady hand at the wheel, somebody who can project competence, and at least if you don't agree with them, you think the country's being well run, and that name is that of Pascal Donoghue.
Yeah, well, look, I actually do like him. I think the man is a logical man. And I always have that. He's been a logical man. But I don't know. But then again, he has the job in Europe too, so he's a busy man as well. So I don't know whether he'll take the job.
Yeah, the other consideration, obviously, is Simon Harris. And Simon Harris, the attraction to Simon Harris, if you're a Fine Gael backbencher, is this is a man who has, you know, there is no one in this country hungrier for power than Simon Harris. He's one of these people who will argue whatever has to be argued, say whatever has to be said, and say it with absolute conviction, whether he believes it or not. And if you're a Fine Gael backbencher and you're looking at somebody to go out there and fight and save your seat, Simon Harris, I should say he's a lovely guy in person, but I'm no fan of his politics. He's somebody who might be attractive. So I think Helen might be mentioned in the initial running, but I think it'll very swiftly devolve into a Pascal versus Simon contest in the heart of Fine Gael.
Do you think the government will last the week? Because a lot of people are saying there should be a general election. You can't keep passing the baton on. Paul Murphy's just called for a general election. Mind you, that doesn't surprise me. I'm sure Sinn Féin will call for a general election. I think general election will be chaos with the European elections and the local elections coming in June and a referendum all on the same day. So that'll be chaos. But this could put the government into chaos, couldn't it?
The problem is there are only two ways a general election can be called. Either the Taoiseach, whether that be Leo Varadkar or whoever his successor is, goes to Michael D. Higgins and says, I want an election. Or the government loses a vote of no confidence, which would require some government backbenchers to vote with the opposition to trigger a general election. The reason there's not going to be a general election is because this causes chaos. And because government backbenchers don't want to go facing the public with no Taoiseach or no leader of Fine Gael in place or anything like that. So there's no chance of a general election unless, God forbid, five or six government TDs resign en masse or drop dead or something and the government no longer has a majority. There won't be a general election.
Okay.
This side of, I think the most likely date now is October. October, if I was to tell your listeners to pencil in a date not to go on their holidays if they want to vote, I'd say early October.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate it. John McGurk, editor of Grip Media. Thanks for coming on the air and talking to us. Also, we got some messages, by the way, coming in as well on WhatsApp as well. I just want to play one of these for you here as well. And I'm going to come to Jackie, who's been waiting forever at this stage now. Let me just play this WhatsApp message for you.
How are you, Noel? Jesus, Noel, you should listen to RTE. You think it was the death of the Messiah. They're literally saying it's the end of Ireland over there. What a great man he was. Typical. They're all looking after each other. RTE scratching their back. They're scratching RTE's back. It's a bloody disgrace. Niall, if you don't do something, I tell you, you're the voice of the people here now. You're the mouthpiece we have. You're the gob with the stick there. It's about time we riled up the troops and got them going.
Well, Jason, you never know. You never know what could happen. Breaking news there as well coming in. Tánaiste Mícheál Martin is to make a statement momentarily. And that'll go out soon. And stay tuned as well. I'll try and get to speak to some other people in relation to that too. But I did say, and I'm going to go back to my caller, Jackie, who's been waiting forever. Jackie, I do apologise to you.
You're okay. And that WhatsApp thing I didn't hear. It all just went silent. So I don't know.
Oh.
Did that go out?
Oh, I don't know. I hope it did. I hope it did. Anyway,
I didn't hear it anyway.
Okay,
that's okay.
Okay, but I think it did go out. Maybe there's just a bit of technical issue that you don't hear it. But here's the thing. Anyway, what Jason was saying was that RTE and the government are playing this like it's the end of the Messiah, and then he suggested I should run for government. But now and ever, that I'm the only one who listens to the people. Jackie, this, you know, I want to talk about hate speech, and I will be talking about hate speech, and I'll come to that in a second. But just a reaction to Mícheál or to Leo Varadkar stepping down.
Yeah, no. Initially, when I heard Kieran Cannon was stepping down, I was kind of surprised because I know Kieran would get re-elected again locally and he would have no issue. And he was, he was part of MEAI's Oireachtas Committee with Music and Entertainment. And he was an amazing guy.
Good guy, yeah.
He did an awful lot for the music industry. He's a great musician. So he, you know, he's well grounded. He knows exactly what's going on in the world of music. So when I heard that, I was kind of going, "Oh, there's something else coming along here." Because if Kieran was stepping aside, I was kind of going, "Right,
who else?
There's something going on in the party." And that now, just and I was listening to John there, and I throw in another name into that, and that would be Heather Humphreys, because if you go back. I know you're going to say that, but it goes back to COVID and how fast she got stuff put in place. And one thing from dealing with Minister Humphreys over the last 3-4 years, we always found her very down to earth. You know, she calls a spade, and she comes out. Now, sometimes you don't agree with her. I didn't agree on disability stuff. In relation to that, I don't agree with the green paper and that's been pushed back now as well until June. So there's certain things I would definitely wouldn't agree with her on. But overall, as a person who gets the job done, she can go in and get it done. Because remember who's running this country? It's the civil servants. So if you don't have a minister who can go in and kind of crack a whip and get the civil servants to do what she wants them to do. Will Helen McEntee be able to achieve that? No. I don't think so.
By the way, that brings us to what I was talking about today. Helen McEntee, she's not very liked. She's not very liked because, of course, crime is not going too well in the country. People don't feel safe. And on top of that, she's too busy and focused on, you know, culture wars, as they call it, or the hate speech bill, which is also coming in Scotland, by the way, on the 1st of April. So in relation to this hate speech bill, do you believe, by the way, that there should be any, you know, prohibition on speech whatsoever? I mean, is free speech an absolute as far as you're concerned?
Look, Irish Council of Civil Liberties came out and are questioning all this. The United Nations Rights Commission, Human Rights Commission, has come out and kind of raised eyebrows about this. It's completely off the wall. It should not. It should be buried in the Shannon. And I know there's, I was listening to Tracy O'Mahony there a while back about, you know, once.
Yes, I've seen Tracy's videos. Yeah, 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 they're very good.
You know, if you take it that it's in there for 90 days, then there's a guillotine thing that can come in here and they can say, right, it has passed. But it's actually in there longer now. And so the talk now is, is it a case that they kind of the government haven't got this across the line because it's been held up so long.
And I've seen bills being held on longer than that. Actually, for example, which bill there was it recently? Relation to the redress for their mother and baby home. That particular bill was 6 years hanging around, being messed around with and fiddled around with, you know, and changed every now and again, and had passed through all three stages. So I've seen bills sit there longer than that. But the problem with this bill for everybody is that although Helen McEntee said, for example, J.K. Rowling misgendering somebody, that kind of idea, wouldn't be considered hate speech, she does go on to say that she hasn't defined hate speech and it's up to the courts to define it. So if I'm a transgender and somebody misgenders me and I take a complaint to the Garda Síochána and say I want that person charged under the new hate speech bill, the Garda Síochána will have no choice because they don't have a definition of hate. So they will have no choice but to charge me, and it will take me a year going through court to find out whether I'm guilty or not guilty, which I'll most likely be not guilty just for misgendering somebody. But in saying that, that's a year of my life destroyed.
And if you take, Michael O'Doul brought up, I don't know, gone back a while ago, in relation to Senator Flynn, where the taxi driver
said, she said that was hate speech, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but the taxi driver was afraid that his car was going
to... Which is quite entitled to do, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's... It's a serious problem. And I kind of had written an email from the MEAI in relation to the hate speech bill because of artists, you know, and comedians and that.
On that note, because there's no description of the word hate or no definition, it'd be very hard to exempt them. Under the Scottish bill, they particularly say in the Scottish bill from the 1st of April that artists, plays, stage shows are not exempt from the law.
Exactly. And I've been told there's no issue there that would not, you know, that would not come into it. But a court can decide differently. It's so vague. Mm. Again, we're back to the same thing as we'll strive.
Let the courts decide what happens. Agreement. Yeah, yeah.
It's vague. It's too vague. And it has to be defined.
Okay, do me a favour. Stay there for a second because loads of people waiting ages. I do apologise to everybody today because I had planned to get everybody on a bit quicker, but unfortunately, because of what has happened, we had to get obviously some political reaction to Leo Varadkar stepping down. But Suzanne, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. So happy today. It's like fantastic news. One brick in the wall has crumbled. I'm so happy. I just want to give you my quick view. Simon Harris, the man who said COVID-19 was the 19th version of COVID, never instilled my confidence after that comment.
I remember that comment, yes. He was so asked why it was called COVID-19. That's right. He said he figured it was the 19th strain.
A man at that level in government who, you know, misses those levels of detail is not for me. But I'm just saying, I'm so happy. I hope Roger O'Gorman is next. Let's see what happens.
That's what I was expecting. When they said earlier on, you know, at about 11 o'clock, there was going to be an earthquake, kind of announcement today at 12 o'clock, I was expecting it to be Roger O'Gorman resigning. But I wouldn't have considered that earthquake. Yeah.
No, but I would have to. I'm hoping that would be the next one this week. I think it's going to fall or clearing up there. Their party, for whatever reasons, for anything, I think Roderick needs to go. As for Helen McEntee and as for Simon, I'll wait and see, but neither of those would inspire.
What's interesting, by the way, just to mention as well, news just coming in there, that Taoiseach Micheál Martin has said he did not anticipate Mr. Varadkar's decision. Speaking this afternoon at the government buildings, he added that the coalition will continue in office even with Mr. Varadkar standing down. It's surprising he didn't have any confidence to share his information with Micheál Martin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I saw that. I'm just watching on an iPad as well. I saw that coming in too, Niall. No, it's the best news ever. And what a day to be on your show. My two favourite people, you and John McGurk. But
Thank you, Suzanne. I appreciate
you're my
that.
Two heroes.
Will you give me a vote? If I ran for election, would you give me a vote?
I will give you a vote. You're the only two people who keep me sane in this fucking world. I'm in prison. I'd be hate speech. No, but just on the hate speech, because I'm really passionate about it. So, you know, again, if you define hate in Wikipedia or the English dictionary, it's to feel intense dislike and feelings of hate and revenge. So I just want to point out, though, you know, just I did this research myself looking into it. Like, we do have the provision of incitement to hatred act 89, which is in place at the moment.
And by the way, can I point out that the guards who say, or the people who say that we don't have enough provisions in the legislation to deal with people, they already charged people in the December or November riots under the Incitement of Hatred Act 1989. So how do they believe it's not adequate when they already use it?
I mean, if you look at that act, it covers everything. It covers sexual orientation, which could cover the gender piece that they're trying to include. But I think the second, so it's there. People may not know it's there, but it's actually, it's probably just education. You can file a complaint to the guards. You can go on the hotline. You can report to social media. You can go on the website. So it is there already if people feel. And you said last week in your show, Noel, when we were talking about the you know, the asylum seekers in the snow, you said there was a lot of awful comments on Twitter. So I just want to say for the record, I like dignity and respect. Like, I will be respectful and dignified. But if you look at the, you know, the definition of hate, I intensely dislike things. And that's just something we all
that's
have
okay, yeah. And by the way, I mentioned...
That's okay.
Yeah, for people who don't know what you're talking about there, I put up a tweet last week about, you know, feeling sorry for people living in tents. And somebody put up something like, take a flamethrower to them, right? And, you know... That's horrendous.
That's not nice.
No, it's not nice.
No.
But hearing it, it's not nice. But should it be illegal? That, you know, the person clearly has issues. puts up something
and my
like
last
that.
Point, Noel, just my last point, because I just want to get these in. Back in January, Barrister Grace O'Sullivan, she did a good sort of piece on the hate, that new hate bill. And she's basically saying people may not be aware of how detrimental the bill would be. And again, we're going back to vague wording. It's a bit like the government couldn't find a woman. So,
or a durable, you know, relationship, for that matter, yeah.
Yeah. So you go back to hate, to intense, to, you know, just, for, in my view, it should be abolished. It should be thrown in the can, and hopefully it will now with all that's going on. To hate something is to dislike intensely.
It's a feeling.
There is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a feeling. You know, it's to be respectful and mindful, but also there is an actual act there at the moment that people can use if they want. The only addition I can see is that on the new hate bill is create new laws to deal with hate crime. That again is ambiguous.
Mm.
So that is...
Well, the problem is not having a definition. And by the way, can I say... I think it's very difficult to define hate anyway, the best of times. I think that's why the Attorney General probably said you can't define it. It'll be up to a court. But as I said already, now, Helen McEntee was asked, you know, would this be a charge? Would this be a charge in one of the interviews she did in primetime? And I'm going, are we letting a woman, when I say a woman, because it's a woman in charge, I'm not being sexist, are we letting a woman decide what is and isn't, you know, a chargeable offence? What is one individual there going to be responsible? Are we going to have to go running to Helen McEntee every single time? No, we're going to have to go to the courts. So, for example, if I misgender somebody because I'm not willing to call somebody, you know, who's a transgender woman, a woman, I want to call them a man because I believe they were born a man. If I misgender somebody, does that mean that I could be charged because that person feels offended by it and hurt by it and feels that somehow I'm threatening their safety? And the guards come and charge me. And even though I may never be actually convicted, it's a year of my life having to defend myself in a courtroom. I mean, really, do we need to go down that road?
No, we don't. And I'm completely for free speech with dignity and respect. And I think at the Scottish Bill, if you look at it, you know, they're talking about memes and jokes. So if you like a tweet, now I'm always very careful on Twitter. You know, I follow everything, but if I find something that's offensive, I won't like it. But if you like something with a meme or a joke that's offensive, you can be charged. And the other thing in Scotland, just want to bring to your attention, maybe you've heard this, but in Scotland, the age is 12 and above. Like, this is going to be very hard to police. But it goes back to my point. The 89 Act is there. The 89 Act can be used at the moment for anybody who feels that, you know, there is hate or, you know, racial hate or whatever hate attributed to them, they have the law there at the moment that they can raise a case. And the sexual orientation bit should cover gender questions too. Would you agree with that, Niall? Like, sexual orientation is a wide broad.
But here's the thing: I'm really curious to see what's going to happen in Scotland because, ironically enough, this law is being brought in on 1st of April. It's an April Fool's joke, on the 1st of April, and of course you have this whole thing at the moment between J.K. Rowling and India Willoughby. Which is really a landmark situation because J.K. Rowling has been asked to remove these tweets calling India Willoughby a man because she's misgendering her, according to the law, or according to what the potentially is the law. And J.K. Rowling has said, no, I'm not going to delete them. So potentially she could be the first person charged under the legislation to test this legislation out for misgendering a person and calling a transgender woman a man. Which would be very interesting to see a person standing in a dock being, what are you accused of? Calling a man a man. Oh, okay. Let's see how that goes.
But Greta Sullivan, a point she made too, like this hate speech bill, is restrictive and undemocratic. taken away our expression of opinions and convictions.
Well, so, I tell you what, Suzanne, on that note, just stay with me for a second, because Grace O'Sullivan has also joined us on the line. Grace O'Sullivan, BL and spokesperson for Free Speech Ireland. Grace, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Your name has been taken in vain many times here in the last 10 minutes. All good, Grace, can I just point out. All good.
Okay.
Grace, in relation to the hate speech bill, I mean, the reason I suppose we're talking about, we're going to talk about it today, but even more so now, because there's a possibility Helen McEntee could be the next Taoiseach of the country. And this is her little pet project, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's been introduced to this government. Certainly something that I would have concerns about. I wrote an article about it which was published in the Bar Review. And I think from a legal perspective, there are certainly concerning elements about it.
And the main concerning element, I think, for most people, well, firstly, the whole speech bill is a main concerning element, but the fact that, yeah, I suppose it's not defining the word hate.
Exactly. So, and I think, you know, obviously there's a principle that the law in general should be clear. But I think that is even more heightened and important when it comes to the criminal law, because we know that there are potential penal sanctions that come from breaching the criminal law. And so that is, I would say, even more so when the criminal law is restricting the exercise of a constitutional right, a right that's protected under the Irish Constitution. And so certainly policing of the freedom of speech by the government through the use of the heavy hand of the criminal law, it should be very clear in nature, and it should be clearly understood to citizens what sort of speech would be breaching this particular law. And so I think that's particularly why this is concerning, because as you point out, hatred is not clearly defined within the bill.
I think we all universally condemn incitement to violence or inciting violence, yeah, or inciting, you know, hurt on another person or damage to a person or harassment or targeted harassment. I think we all understand that. I think, but most of us are not stupid and we understand that. And as Suzanne has pointed out, that would be covered under the 1989 legislation anyway, most likely, if we just updated that legislation somewhat. But the idea that we would be following or mirroring almost what Scotland are doing at the moment to some degree, although the Scottish law seems to be even stricter than the one we're proposing, and bringing in, you know, a law that, you know, obviously prohibits levels of speech that may offend or hurt other people's feelings, which is essentially what this is. I mean, Grace, do you believe that freedom of speech is absolute? Should it be absolute?
Well, I mean, I suppose you can conceive of situations where there should be restrictions on freedom of speech, and certainly you've pointed out incitement to violence would be an obvious example. But I think the point is that, you know, if we're going to have these restrictions, particularly under the criminal law, that it can be clearly drafted, those situations can be clearly set out. But I think when it comes to restricting speech in a manner that's very vague and kind of leaves a lot to the imagination and actually leads to a sort of a self-censoring, I think that's very problematic for a democracy. Which one of the foundational cornerstones is being able to freely debate, freely speak, freely talk about issues. And I think, you know, it's obvious that there is no right under the Constitution to live unoffended. There's a right.
No, well, this is basically going to bring in a piece of legislation that gives you the right to be offended, really, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think if our constitutional protections are going to have any kind of meat, you know, it's important that our legislation is clear, and particularly criminal law policing speech.
I mean, what is the next step now? Of course, as I said, Helen McEntee might be busy this week if she is going to be promoted to Taoiseach. We don't know whether it'll be her, Simon Harris, Pascal Donoghue, but people are saying it could be her, and I predicted this at the start of the year. She is going to keep focusing on this. She is determined to bring in this legislation, even though some backbenchers have already, both in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, have now said they oppose the legislation, but she seems determined to bring it in. She said she is bringing it in. What can we do about it?
Well, I think obviously, you know, public debate is very important. And so the media kind of giving exposure to this issue, giving exposure to the concerns of the people. It's very important that, you know, the population is educated on why this is concerning, that it's not just fear mongering, but the importance of constitutional rights and protections. It's not about promoting or advocating for hatred, but, you know, why is this concerning? Why is this problematic? And actually, free speech is in everybody's interest. So I think public debate is a big part of it. And obviously Free Speech Ireland has also been doing a great job in terms of raising awareness. And I think they have a petition that they want to present as well. So there's certainly, you know, people are making attempts really to bring awareness about this, to educate people, and that this is something that is, it's not just a fringe. This is for everybody. Free speech is for every citizen, and it's important for us all. Because the restriction of my speech today could be the restriction of your speech tomorrow. So I think just awareness, you know, focusing on this issue in the media and educating people is very important.
Listen, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you joining us today. Grace Sullivan, barrister and spokesperson for Free Speech Ireland. And don't forget, by the way, if you want to sign that petition, I'm assuming it's on the Free Speech Ireland website or on their Twitter account or Facebook account, wherever it is that you would normally go to get them. Thank you very much indeed, Grace.
Thank you.
Stay with me there for a second, Susanna. I know Stephen's been waiting forever, and so has James. Stephen, hi, how are you?
As ever, it's not raining today in Cork. Very, very interesting news today. I'm absolutely delighted. I actually expect Simon Harris to be Taoiseach, because if you look at the failures that have been health ministers that have destroyed health, they've all been Taoiseach.
Including Micheál Martin, yeah.
You know what I mean? And they've all failed. So the political elite promote failure. So he's bound to, he's one of the biggest failures. So he's bound to get it. Closely followed by McAtee, who hasn't a clue. But hate speech is, I mean, do they actually, they don't actually realise what it could do. Because to me, if somebody now turns around, if this has passed, and calls me right wing racist, or right wing, I'm straight down to the guards. you know what I mean? I'm straight down to the guards.
Well, you probably would be covered under a characteristic. You're a white male.
absolutely.
Yeah, you have a characteristic, you know, haven't you? Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But I was thinking about it, and they're saying, you know, could be offended, right? I could be walking outside a Roman Catholic church. Mm. I could be offended by the singing. So I'm straight down to the guards. There could be a call from a minaret for prayer for the Muslims.
But I mean, it's very vague, isn't it? I mean, look at the laws. Look at the law in Scotland, for example. The one in Scotland uses words like create a new crime of stirring up hatred against any protected group. So what does even stirring up hatred mean? It doesn't mean anything. I mean, if I turn around tomorrow and said, I don't know about these old transgenders or something like that. Is that stirring up hatred? Does that mean other people go, Niall Boylan says he doesn't know about them, so maybe that's stirring up kind of some sort of hatred? Do you understand what I'm saying? When I see, for example, yesterday that, you know, Donald Trump was all over the news yesterday because he said there was going to be a bloodbath when he was talking about the car industry and all these cheap electric cars being made in Mexico. And he was castigated for using the word bloodbath because they said that incited violence. I mean, the word bloodbath is used in economics all the time. An economic bloodbath, it's used all the time.
Yeah. Well, the ridiculous thing about Scotland is I switched over because I watch all the football, soccer, whatever you want to call it. And I turned over and I saw Hibs v Rangers. And Rangers were fans. They were singing the British national anthem. Mm. That could be misconstrued because of the
stirring up hatred. Yeah.
Of stirring up hatred. You can actually have the same thing, the Irish national anthem, upsetting a unionist politician who's visiting Ireland. It is completely and utterly woolly, bonkers. You should not be able to, when they say incite hatred, I mean, I actually don't agree with singing the British anthem at Hibernian, because that is stirring up. That should be completely banned, and the club made to tell their supporters, but vice versa. Mm. You know, singing the Irish national anthem at Celtic Park, that should be banned too.
Okay, well, hang on. Let me just go to James, because he's also equally been waiting ages. I do apologise to everybody today, because obviously things went a little bit astray today. James, hi, how are you doing?
Hey, Niall, how's it going?
You're waiting there 20 minutes, James. I feel really bad.
It's all good. It's all good, Niall.
Yeah. And it's been a while, James, as well, by the way. You started off your new job and everything else. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the new job has me doing shifts now, so it has me all over the place. So this is why, I, as your producer contacted me yesterday and I said, well, I can come on because I was literally about to go to work, but I can come on tomorrow because I'm actually off today. But
Well, two things. Firstly, what do you think of today's news? Are you surprised?
No, because I knew this was happening last week now, because it was said to me last week. But anyway, that's another story. This has been knocking around legal term or legal circles for the last week. Helen McAtee won't take the job. She'll put herself up, but she won't take the job. Basically, what will happen is Pascal Donohue will take the job for the next couple of months, lead him into the general election, because he's the only one in the party that has any sort of political weight still behind him, and he's the only person that probably has a chance of being returned. Leo Varadkar will leave. I'll give you my prediction for the next 6 months. Leo Varadkar will leave the country, move to Canada with his partner. Simon Coveney will move to New York for the UN, because all his stuff is all foreign affairs based, so that's where he will go. Micheál Martin won't run again. Rodrigo Gorman won't run again. Most of the current government won't run again. You can see another Fine Gael TD yesterday turned around and said that after 20 years he's not running again, blaming outside factors. The simple fact, Niall, is they know, and I will quote President Trump, there is a bloodbath coming for them, and they know that.
You're not allowed to use the word bloodbath anymore.
They're like rats off the sinking ship. They know, because they would rather turn around and say, well, actually, you know what, I decided not to run again due to family life, or due to this, or due to that, or due to the other. Because they know that even outside of Dublin, Niall, the Fine Gael TDs, which would be stronger outside of Dublin, even they know they're getting her in the neck. I've had a couple of politicians banging on my door now because of the European and local elections.
Yeah.
And the fourth thing I always say to them, and I'll always say this to other people as well, if a TD or a councillor or an MEP approaches you, always say to them, look, you approached me, I didn't approach you. Because then if they turn around and say, oh, you come over here to verbally abuse me, you can actually say to them, well, actually, you approached me. That's the fourth thing I always say to them. Because then it doesn't give them that out of turning and walk away saying, oh, you come over here to ambush me. But anyway, with regards to the hate speech, and as I think Stephen has just said there, and the girl previous about the 1989 Act, it's an absolute legal minefield now. Because as he has said, why if I was to call Stephen, you're a racist. And Stephen can say, oh, am I now? Right, straight down to the Gardaí lodge a complaint. The Gardaí might take it seriously. The Gardaí might take it not. More than likely, they won't. But what's going to happen is you're going to have so much Garda and court time tied up with this that eventually the Gardaí will say, you know what, we're not dealing with this. If James says that, we're going to prosecute him under the 1989 Excitement to Hatred Act, which I should be prosecuted if I called him. Say I didn't like black people, Niall, for whatever reason, I didn't like black people. That makes me a racist. And I shall be prosecuted with that.
Well, there's no law. There's no law against being racist. There's no law currently in this country. It's not illegal to be a racist.
You're just an arsehole.
You shouldn't be racist, but there's no law.
Yeah.
Now, there is a law if you incite violence against somebody because of the colour of their skin or because of their sexual orientation, or whatever.
That's what I'm saying. If I turn around and say, right, let's go out and beat up every black person on the street for absolutely no reason.
But there's a law. There's a law already there for that, yeah.
Absolutely. And what they need to do is just slightly tweak that law. What I would love, Niall, as well, is I hope he takes J.K. Rowling to court. Because could you imagine the legal team?
Well, India Willoughby has already said what J.K. Rowling said is incitement to hatred. So I have no doubt that's going to happen.
The Metropolitan Police, I don't think, are really too interested. But I would love if he did, and I'm saying the word he again, if he decided to push this. Because could you imagine the legal team that she could afford? She could afford the best lawyers in the world, never mind the best lawyers in the UK. And she would go into court and have this wiped out within 5 minutes. So in a way, Niall, it actually would be a good thing if he did actually prosecute and go ahead with this, because then we would see how stupid the whole thing actually is.
Can you imagine standing in a courtroom? What are you accused of? Calling a man. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Where does that legal argument even start? Do you know what I mean?
And that's the thing. And see, this is the thing, though.
If India Willoughby wants to be a woman, that's India Willoughby's business. I couldn't care less, right? But I don't have to, you know, or other people who don't agree or whatever scientific reason, don't have to play along with it. It's like you turn around to me and say, Niall, I believe in God, but you don't, and I demand you believe in God. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's bonkers.
Well, look, if India Wallaby wants to call himself a woman, let him call himself a woman.
It's fine. You're not mine. Get on with your life.
Just don't have me. Just don't ask me to. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if I wanted to turn around to him, and I think it was Piers Morgan who said one day to a woman who was saying that you can be what you want to be, and he said, well, can I be a black lesbian? And the other woman who was with him on the show at the time, who was a black lesbian, just burst out laughing because she's seen the absolutely absurdity of the whole thing. And your woman couldn't answer him. She's like, Piers, you're being silly. And he goes, I'm not being silly. You're saying that I can be any gender, anything, any sex I want to be. Why can't I be a black lesbian? And she couldn't answer him. And this is the thing, Niall. It's like, with regards to Helen McEntee, and I will say this, and I don't say this lightly, the only reason she is in her position is because of her father's situation. That's the only reason why she's there.
I know. Some people have said that already, although I've been accused of being insensitive, but some people have said that already, and I'm not denying it. Well, listen, lads, I'm sorry, I have to cut it a little bit short. Thank you very much indeed, Stephen, and thank you, by the way, as well, James. I appreciate you coming on. Just to keep you going on the news there, there's lots of texts and WhatsApps coming in. I'll just play one of your WhatsApps here now as well.
Hi, Niall. I just thought I'd add, giving the recent news that Varadkar is resigning. It's a very calculated move. He knew he wasn't going to be re-elected. He knew that the party was in crisis. And to be honest with you, good riddance to him. I don't think he did any good for this country. And as I said to a friend earlier, that's one head of a three-headed snake gone. Hopefully the others will follow quite soon and we'll have an election and maybe put this country back on track to where it should be. Thanks, Niall. Take care.
And just before we finish up talking about that, because I want to move on in a second as well, a lot of people are asking, you know, they kind of didn't hear what Leo had to say today. Let's just have a quick listen to what an edited version of what Leo actually said today, if I could just play that.
When I became party leader and Taoiseach back in June 2017, I knew that one part of leadership is knowing when the time has come to pass on the baton to somebody else and then having the courage to do it. That time is now. So I am resigning as President and Leader of Fine Gael effective today and will resign as Taoiseach as soon as my successor is able to take up that office. I've asked our Party General Secretary and Executive Council to provide for the new leader to be elected in advance of the Ardesh on Saturday, April 16th, thus allowing a new Taoiseach to be elected when the Dáil resumes after the Easter break. There's never a right time to resign high office. However, this is as good a time as any. Budget 2024 is done. Negotiations have not yet commenced on the next one. The institutions of the Good Friday Agreement are working again. And our trading relationship with the UK in the post-Brexit era is settled and stable. The new Taoiseach will have a full 2 months to prepare for the local and European elections and up to a year before the next general election. My reasons for stepping down are both personal and political. I believe this government can be re-elected and I believe my party, Fine Gael, can gain seats in the next Dáil. Most of all, I believe the re-election of this three-party government would be the right thing for the future of our country, continuing to take us forward, protecting all that's been achieved and building on it. But after careful consideration and some soul-searching, I believe that a new Taoiseach and a new leader will be better placed than me to achieve that. I am standing aside in the absolute confidence that the country and the economy are in a good place and that my colleagues in government from all three parties, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens and the Oireachtas, will continue to work hard for the nation's best interests. I know inevitably there will be speculation as to the quote-unquote real reason for my decision. These are the real reasons. That's it. I have nothing else lined up. I have nothing in mind. I have no definite personal or political plans. I want to finish by thanking the people of Ireland for giving me the opportunity to serve them. And I promise I'll keep working for Ireland and my community in any way I can in the future. Thank you very much.
There you go. He almost started crying there towards the end. But it's coincidental. If you look at the photograph there, you'll see everybody that has been mentioned in the last hour with our callers are all standing beside him. Is that a coincidence? Probably not. You've got Simon Harris, Heather Humphreys, Pascal Donoghue, and standing right beside him is Helen McEntee, almost waiting to step over onto the podium. Do you think that's a coincidence? There are many other people that could have been there for Fine Gael, but they weren't. So do you think it's a coincidence that those ones are there, which are, if you were a Paddy Power better, it'd be one of those lot. I don't think it's going to be Pascal Donoghue. I think he's too busy. I don't think it's going to be Simon Harris. Some people are saying Simon Harris. I don't think he's capable of the job, although he wants the power. Heather Humphreys? No, she's too vanilla. Nobody wants her as the leader of the country. Halle McEntee would be a disaster. A disaster for Ireland. An absolute... I couldn't think of anybody worse in government to put in charge of the country. She is completely incapable and oblivious to the fact that she's incapable. Anyway, it's time to move on. By the way, don't forget, by the way, keep supporting the show. All of this costs money. We have to do it every single day. We don't get paid for doing it. Please go to our website, either donate or subscribe. And don't forget, you can listen to the show live on the website too at any time, www.nileboylan.com. Please try and donate or subscribe because it costs us thousands every month to this show. And as I said, we don't get paid. All three of us don't get paid. We just enjoy doing it. We love giving you the platform every single day, uncensored, to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.